views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Listening to the Psychic Professors Show, the Voices of Spirit Radio, with international medium and spirit artist Dr. Susan Barnes. This hit call-in show will answer any questions you have about spiritual communication through on-air readings and spirit artistry. Get ready to receive breakthrough wisdom to enliven and enlighten your life. To say this show is educational is an understatement. Dr. Susan is the medium through which spirit communication occurs and fills the canvas of your life.
Hello, I'm Dr. Susan Barnes, and you're listening to the Psychic Professor Show on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay tuned with us for the next hour, and let us help you experience the voices of spirit. Each week on Psychic Professor Show, we will have some of the most knowledgeable spiritual voices helping you to answer your personal questions. And today, I'm very, very pleased to have August Goforth, who is a medium and author and an extremely spiritual person. So welcome, August.
Thank you, Susan. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, we're really glad to have you. And yes, we were talking about the fact that so many people, when they're a child, they start to get impressions or they have imaginary friends, or they can even see spirit, but the adults around them don't understand it. So they try to get them to shut up or they get them to close down. And the worst case I heard was of a woman who was actually a physical medium where the dishes in the kitchen used to fly off the shelves and physical phenomena would happen around her, but her father was a minister and he convinced her that it was the devil. So she was terrified of doing any kinds of mediumship. But fortunately, that did not happen to you. Is that correct?
That's correct. I'm the eldest of eight kids. And so in the beginning, it was just my parents and I for a few years before anyone came along. And in those days, things were much more calm and quieter. If you can imagine having eight kids about the house, it's not so calm and quiet. But in those, we lived in, we had moved into a very old Victorian house. It was way too big for us. And so it was just very Adams family. I think it was very wonderful for me. There were lots of animals around. So this is in the mountains of northern Appalachia, very isolated, that my family's been there for several hundred years. And when I began exhibiting behavior in certain ways and talking in certain ways and sharing things in certain ways, which as a child I didn't think was extraordinary or different in any kind of way, and my parents didn't treat it as such either, it wasn't until my grandparents on both sides and several aunts and uncles had just started kind of quietly intervening in a way, spending some time with me and asking me questions and supporting me. And it was the language that they used as well, too. So I was having experiences that I thought everyone else was having. And some were and some weren't. And they included seeing people in spirit in the way that I would see anybody in their physical body. And I was often carrying on conversations with these people in front of other people. And it's not that my parents were humoring me, but they understood what was going on. My father was a little rattled by it, because he had sort of married into a family of psychics and mediums, and he didn't realize his own mother was actually considered a very spiritual person that could talk to people on the other side. That was just considered normal in his family too. So I was doing a lot of the same things. And I knew that my aunts and uncles and grandparents were giving my parents advice on what to do and what not to do. And basically was just to let me do whatever I wanted to do and not to shame me or punish me or scare me in any kind of a way. It just ran into trouble when they had babysitters stay over, and I guess the babysitters had strange things going on with me and they didn't want to babysit with me anymore. And also when we started going out, I was old enough to go out to restaurants with my parents. Of course, I would see spirit people in the restaurants who were there with us. And I would assume that people would hold the door open for them or set extra placemats for them, which my parents would do at home, and extra pull up extra chairs at the table. But the waiters or waitresses didn't want to do that and didn't understand. So sometimes it caused a little social awkwardness.
Yes, I can understand that.
Yeah, but it was all with a good sense of humor. Like, I was never made to feel like I had done anything wrong. And I just still assumed that everyone else was experiencing the exact same things that I was. So I was a little puzzled sometimes why people weren't seeing and hearing the same things that I was seeing and hearing. I also, almost every night, I had this huge, huge brass bed all to myself in this big Victorian bedroom when I was very little. And as soon as the lights would go out, people would start talking to me. And they were people that I recognized as friends. I didn't know them in the daytime, but at nighttime, I called them my nighttime friends. And they would talk to me, do little light shows. They actually taught me to read. And people were kind of puzzled how I learned to read, but they would, I guess it would look like we would think today what a Kindle book would look like, sort of like an illuminated plaque or something. And they would, they taught me to read. And the room was adjacent to my parents' bedroom, and my parents were constantly yelling at me to pipe down because we would get laughing so hard, whatever we were doing and talking, and they would tell me jokes and sing me songs. And my parents never came in and demanded anything. They just said, "Will you people keep it quiet down in there?" kind of thing. And I just thought that was normal too. And until I was old enough to go into school, and I came across other kids who did not see the world or hear the world in the way that I did. And that was a bit of a jarring shock.
I can imagine that it was, yeah. But you know what your parents did is the advice that I always give to people who have, you know, they have these indigo children today. And I have a friend, the professor, who has a set of twins. And the twins start talking about their other parents. And they'll talk about their lifetime before this one. And he just goes along with it. And that's the best thing that you can do. It's terrible when the parents try to stop it or deny it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that I was probably just placed, like spirit just orchestrated things around me to keep me safe and to smooth over any weird rough patches. They were very protective of me. And I actually went to a Catholic school that was taught by nuns. And you think that would be a terrible experience. And it was for some people, according to reports. But for me, it wasn't. These nuns were actually very spiritual people. That's why they were there. And we went to church every morning before school. And I loved the church and the sense of silence and sacredness that it had. And I could hear spirit people even louder in music, even inside the church. And the nuns seemed to recognize in me that there was something about me, that the priest used to think that I was going to be a priest when I got older. They thought that I had a calling or something. So they were aware that there was something going on. And there were a couple of nuns that gave me a hard time because they would talk about certain things in history that spirit people were telling me, no, that's not right. They've got it completely wrong. And then I would argue with the nuns about it. And I kind of had a reputation for being argumentative sometimes with nothing to back me up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I can see that, because that was the one thing that I found, that when I was a kid, I had claircognizance, so I would know things and have no way of knowing how or why I knew them, which did cause me problems at times. But yes, But that's interesting. So the spirit people, they would say something historical, and the spirit people would say that's not the way it happened?
Right. Like, of course, every day we would have what was called religious class. And so then they would teach Catholic, Roman Catholic dogma. And a lot of the stuff that they taught was geared down for children, but a lot of it I recognized as nonsense. Like, I didn't buy it in any way. And spirit people were there with me in the classroom saying, you know, that's not quite right what they're talking about. They're sort of retelling the story to fit their own agenda. And when I was very young, like 6 or 7 years old, I would challenge the nuns on this and give them my version of what I thought was the truth. And they didn't expect that anyone would argue back with them or try to debate what they were telling us. We were just supposed to swallow it all, hook, line, and sinker, and I wouldn't do it. So I got scolded a few times by the principal and said, you know, we're not sure where you're getting these stories, but you're upsetting us and some of the other children, which wasn't true. And so just tone it down a little bit. So I still didn't understand. I thought that they had access to the same information that I had as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, you would have thought that because here are nuns, they're supposed to be spiritual people, and you would expect them to be able to communicate with the afterlife.
Well, I think probably a good many of them were spiritual to that point where they did their spiritual sensing was still dominant in their lives. They hadn't lost touch in the way that, you know, children are, as you said, children are born naturally with these spiritual senses, and they're kind of frightened out of us or drummed out of us in some kind of a way. And I think probably people who go into monasteries or become nuns or something like that probably are a little weird themselves in some way and have a calling of some kind and need some kind of structure because there's no one around them like I had to tell them what was going on. So of course they would look for guidance to spiritual people and then have to buy into the dogma of whatever the particular religion is in order to be accepted. But I found them all very nice people, especially after Pope John changed everything and allowed English to be spoken into the church and relaxed the way that nuns could dress. And suddenly they relaxed and they were more human and more friendly. So it was a good experience overall.
Yes. Well, that's good. But also I was going to say, I know a lot of, there's a bunch of people in Lilydale that were former nuns or have been associated with the Dale that were nuns. So a number of them have switched over to doing mediumship. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you a funny story. I went to a workshop at Janet Nohavik's church, and she used to be a former nun. And I'm sitting there, and I got just partnered up randomly with someone. And I'm sitting there to give her a message. And all of a sudden, for some reason, I looked down at her shoes. And they were very plain shoes. And the word nun came into my mind. So I said to her, I said, you know, the word nun came into my mind. And she said, oh, I am one. So, yes, there was a nun taking the psychic class with everyone else. So that was a lot of fun. But anyway, we're about to go into a break. So I'll just say you've been listening to the Psychic Professor Show with Dr. Susan Barnes. We're going to take a quick break now, and when we come back, we will explore more with August Goforth about his fascinating life, and we'll now go on to maybe the books he's written. So stay tuned.
The knowledge book currently studied in 39 countries and 15 languages around the world accelerates our evolution, takes us out of depression, offers universal truth, protects us, and makes us stronger, both spiritually and physically. So if you are interested in the knowledge book, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net and tune in to the Knowledge Book Radio with Marge Potasik on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Your happiness is your choice on Natural Peace Radio. Follow Sarah Van Rieswijk as she addresses the power of emotions. Each month, Sarah covers different topics as she helps listeners activate their energetic spark and create powerful energy and amazing opportunities. Manifest your desires with Natural Peace Radio. For more information on Sarah and her work, visit naturalpeaceliving.com.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Hi, this is Laura Richer, host of On the Verge Radio. Sometimes you hear encouraging messages like transform your life now, become empowered, create the life you crave, and it all seems overwhelming and you're not sure where to start. I'm here to tell you that self-improvement is not always fun and easy, but it is always worth it. The path to creating positive changes begins with releasing the things that have been holding you back. Then you can create a life that inspires you. I know this because I've done it. You can find out more about what I do by visiting my website, seattlehealinghypnosis.com. I look forward to supporting you on your journey.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
We're back on the Psychic Professor Show with Dr. Susan Barnes. But before we continue, I'd like everybody to know how they can get in touch with me and that this program is sponsored by the Spirit Art Gallery. And if you go to www.spiritartgallery.net, you'll be able to find information out about me and all of the things that I'm doing. My guest today is August Goforth, and we've been having a fascinating conversation about his childhood and how he related to spirit. And coming back to that topic, August, I wanted to ask you a question. You were in a rural area, yet on both sides of your family, people were very, very spiritual and seemed to be aware of spiritualist concepts. Is that true?
It was, but it wasn't articulated in the way that you and I are talking about it. Now, it was considered part of the culture, but people were very guarded about, they didn't use language like psychic. I know that my grandmother, who had seven sisters, they were all had different psychic powers that the community recognized of healing and conjuring and stuff. They might be called witches, but they didn't use that word. My grandfather was the town dowser, so he found the water for all the farmers and the people in the area. But people didn't see that as outstanding or strange. They were kind of protective about it. So there was always, everything was kind of couched in very subtle terms. Because as these little mountain communities started opening up to more city people who were coming in and buying houses and bringing their kids to school, there was still some mistrust of people. So there was a lot of very, they didn't use words like medium or spiritualist or anything like that.
No, but they were, which is really, really interesting.
Right. It was part of the culture, so it wasn't considered weird or abnormal. And for me, most of the older people, and by older people, I mean people probably who were in their 60s, 70s, and 80s, seem to have more grasp on such things than younger people, and kind of continued to that day as the older people, the older generations died out. There really wasn't a lot passed on. Some of my cousins also showed mediumistic abilities, but showed no interest in it, or else their spouses were weirded out about it or something, or when they went to college, you know, they sort of lost touch with that. And I'm really the only one, as far as I know, who stayed in touch with it. Although when I do get together with family members, some of the older family members, I can tell by the way that they're looking at me and the way they talk to me that they remember and they understand.
Okay, now let's tell us, how did you go from this rural area to New York City?
I don't really know. Spirit orchestrated it, apparently. So where I grew up was, it was just one county, one stoplight, one school, a lot of small one-room schoolhouses in those days. And poverty-stricken and not very many people. And I was related to almost everyone there. So having grown up into this pristine wilderness, a lot of primitive timber there, moving to Manhattan, New York would seem like the complete opposite, but that's where spirit brought me in all kinds of very interesting ways, through education, through friends, through reading. And this is long before the internet, and actually brought me to the only stand of primitive timber forest left on Manhattan, which very few people know about. And it's at the very top of the island of Manhattan. And it's a 200-acre forest of primitive timber that's never been lumbered and never will be. And I live pretty much at the foot of this. It's like a mountain. There's a mountain here. It's the highest part of Manhattan. And there are two ley lines that cross each other, two ley lines of energy. So it's quite a PowerPoint, and there is a very strong Native American presence in this particular part of the island for many, many years, and it's still considered an historical area because of that. So spirit brought me to the only place that I probably could survive psychically and emotionally and psychologically on Manhattan, because otherwise it would have been way too overwhelming for me.
Now, did I see you went to NYU?
I did. I am a licensed psychotherapist, so I did my higher education at NYU.
So did I. That's why I remembered it. Yes, I'm an NYU grad as well. That's where I did my master's work and PhD.
It's a good school.
It is very good school. So now, did you commute all the way down from the tip end of Manhattan down NYU and back?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You did. Okay. So you've always lived up there. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's really interesting. And I always ended up living in the middle of Manhattan with all the craziness going on. So I know exactly what you mean by that.
Yeah. So it's like my office where I practice psychotherapy is right smack in the middle of everything at Columbus Circle. And it's a beautiful, energetic place, but it's so wonderful that I get to get on the subway and come home at night and come to this very quiet forest. It's my apartment building is right at the edge of this forest. It's magical to me. I'm so lucky. And it's right where the water goes around too. So there's all these wonderful elements that support someone who is a medium in terms of their psychic well-being.
Well, yes, because a lot of my historical readings, the area that I live in, you know, near Lilydale, is also supposed to be an area where the environment is right for mediumship.
Right. Manhattan was well known for physical mediumship, transmediumship, indirect voice for many years. And so was Long Island. A lot of mediums have come off Long Island. So, you know, like England or these places where they're surrounded by water, or the Great Lakes region, up by Lilydale and that. So there seems to be a lot of evidence to support that idea.
Yes, I have to tell you something funny. My grandmother used to go out and see all of the mediums out at the tip of Long Island at the Gurney Inn. Because apparently they used to go out there and do readings, and she would go and join them, and she was a card reader.
Oh.
Yeah. But not tarot cards. She had a regular deck of cards with things written on them.
Uh-huh.
So.
That's very interesting.
Just a little bit of historical tidbit. So there does seem to be something with water and mediumship.
Right. Although there seems to have been a falling off of mediumship, at least in New York, in Manhattan, over the years. And I'm not sure why that is. I suspect it's just because of different environmental factors and because the stress levels are so high here. I think that interferes with the kind of harmony that you need to have good mediumship and good circle experiences.
Well, the other thing that a lot of people have been writing about, too, is the fact that in the Victorian times, where was the heyday of spiritualism, people didn't have all of these electronic distractions. So they would go home and they would play games or talk to each other or play the piano or sing or have seances. Where today, our lives are so caught up with cell phones and iPads and computers and people and just all kinds of crazy things going on. So yeah, that probably is not good for mediumship.
Probably not. It's interesting. As you had mentioned before that I've written some books, what I've noticed is that people have reported to me that reading my book, one has been published, the other one's going to be released in a few weeks, that when people read the physical book, they had a very different experience than when they read it electronically. And something about holding the physical book, it seemed to generate more vibrations of some kind, and it seemed more alive. And people were reporting to me that when they tried to read the book on their tablet or Kindle or something, oftentimes the electronic device would go haywire and have problems. So I really encourage people to read physical books, whatever books they're reading about mediumship or spiritual things. I think they have a very different connection with the physical object than you would with technology.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And we are now coming up towards a second break. And I would also add to you that when I'm writing books that are not spiritually oriented, spirit does work with the paperback books by either opening the right page to the exact quote I need or doing something like that. So, yes, I think you're absolutely right. With the digital technologies, we can get an interference going on there. And sometimes that works with spirit and sometimes it doesn't.
And we see that when people want to bring in electronic devices into seances, you know, like to try to record them in some way, that they seem to interfere with the energies that are going on.
Yes. Well, anyway, we're going to take a break now and just remind everyone that you're listening to the Psycho Professor Show with Dr. Susan Barnes. And my guest today is August Goforth. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
Tune in to Mainstream Metaphysics Radio to harness your connection with the universe to effect change for optimal success and happiness. Named one of the country's top psychics, Eve now brings her insights and gifts to this weekly hit call-in show, joined by visionaries, leaders, and gifted others, but mostly you. Jot it down, Thursdays, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The truth is funny. Shift happens with Colette Marie Steffen is excited to welcome Karen Benton as a monthly guest host. Tune in on the third Wednesday of each month at 8 a.m. Pacific time to regain confidence and trust in your capacity to create change in your life, your health, your family, and your well-being. Karen Benton is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
To see your life from an angel's perspective, book a personal consultation with Claire Candy Hoff, angelic walk-in angel Ariel at Angel Healing House. Candy provides intuitive counseling, Reiki, and angel readings in person in Los Angeles or nationally and internationally via phone or Skype. She will channel the practical tools you need to transform your life. Call now, 831-277-3716, or visit angelhealinghouse.com.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com.
You're back on the Psychic Professor Show with Dr. Susan Barnes, and I'd just like to remind you that you can find me and find all the things that I'm doing and learn about readings by going to my website at www.spiritartgallery.net. So check it out and see what you can find there. There's lots of things on the website. And now I am just really pleased to go back to August Goforth and continue our conversation. And I'm going to ask August at this point if he could please tell us a little bit about the book that he has had published.
Yes, the first book was published in 2009. It took about 7 or 8 years altogether to manifest because I had no intentions of writing a book whatsoever. I have a very full life. I have a very thriving practice as a psychotherapist. And I had actually been at a kind of consciousness retreat at the Monroe Institute down in Virginia. And at the end of it, my companion, Timothy Gray, who had transitioned a few years before that and had reemerged into my life spiritually in several physical manifestations and then started interacting with me and bringing things to me, asked if I would be interested in writing a book with people in spirit. And not knowing what I was getting into, I said yes. And the book started manifesting, and so it's called The Risen. And The Risen is a particular term that I use. It's a generic term for people who have transitioned to the other side. So it's not a particular religious connotation in any way. It's just people who have risen, because they often expressed their transition as rising, like they sort of fell asleep here in some way and they woke up on the other side. And so I just automatically called them The Risen. The book is called The Risen, Dialogues of Love, Grief, and Survival Beyond Death. And it has a subtitle, 21st Century Reports from the Afterlife through Contemplative, Intuitive, and Physical Mediumship. So my mediumship is physical mediumship, but it's also something I call contemplative or intuitive as my own experience. And so the book was kind of, I don't know if I want to use the word channeled, but it was manifested through me with Tim, who was acting as an intermediary between a group of risen people who called themselves the Risen Collective. And they were the primary force behind the orchestration of the book. And to my understanding, at that time, the Risen Collective was composed of over 1,500 spiritual beings and cooperating together, and they wanted to bring certain kinds of information through. And because of my educational background and my abilities, they thought, and because Tim was a writer and editor when he was living here in New York, thought that the two of us would be good candidates for getting this book through. Also, they were fascinated that Tim and I had such a strong connection that he was able to find his way back to me, physically manifesting to me because of the vibrations that we had going. And they wanted to work off those vibrations. So that was a lot that I just told you. I don't know if it really conveys what the book is about. It really is not written, I consider it not written for beginners. There are plenty of books out there for people interested in New Agey kind of things and astrology and how-to books and stuff like that. This book was not written for those people. This book was written for people who already have worked their way through all of this and wrapped their mind around these things. And so they're no longer captivated by fear about these things, but they're held more like in an awe, a position of awe. And so it was written for mediums by spirit and by me as a medium as well. And it just is meant to enhance the mediumship experience, and it brings, it explores a lot of deeper information from the mentality or the psychology of people in spirit, I guess I would say. So there's a lot of psychology in it as well, too. It's described as a book written for the future. That's what people have told me. So I don't know if that means that people will be more open to it after I'm long gone. It's possible.
Well, I mean, I do feel that there is a change coming, and that some of the people who are more spiritually inclined are finding each other and seeking each other out at this point. And it's kind of amazing to me, the people that have come into my life in just the past few months that are now like majorly important. I mean, and they're all very, very, very spiritual people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So so your book is really for someone who's spiritually minded and had some experience in spiritual topics.
Right. So it would be people who are already mediums or who have had spiritual experiences that they haven't lost touch with their own sense of spirituality. And it consists of a lot of conversations that happen as the book is being written between me and Tim. Because I'm clairvoyant and clairaudient, he and I communicate an awful lot. And it's just normal, like it was for me as a child. He communicates with me now as anyone would have when I was a child. So that's why it's called Dialogues of Love, Grief, and Survival. And it talks a lot about grief. It talks about a lot what happens. He reports his experience, what happened to him as he transitioned beyond this world and what it was like. And it was the sub-theme of grief that really attracted me as a therapist, because that comes up so much in so many ways and so many forms of trauma in my practice. And I'm one of those people that have actually experienced maybe a greater than normal amount of deaths in my family ever since I was a child, almost an unordinary number of deaths. And so I have a particular understanding through these experiences. And that's kind of where the second book came through, which took 5-6 more years to write, and I just finished it. So I think that's something that you wanted to talk about a little bit about in the next segment.
Yeah. But in this one, I just wanted to say to you that what you're describing with the spirit work and the nature of the book, you were trancing. You might not have been in a deep, deep trance, but you were in some form of trance when you were writing this.
Definitely. Yeah. And it's an ecstatic trance, too. And that's why I say my mediumship is contemplative and intuitive, because when I was in Catholic school, I learned a lot. I would ask the priests, and they would teach me about the contemplatives and certain saints who also were mediums, most likely, how to access those states. So I was meditating from a very early age. So yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So I would not call it channeling.
No.
Because no. Yeah, it's just funny. I've been dealing with the AREI people and definitions, and I'm like, love to find the definitions of these things. And with channeling, it's in a more of a conscious state, and it's also not always spiritual entities.
Right. When I was in the college that I went to was not very far from Jane Roberts' house. And she was channeling Seth at the time. And so every weekend, a bunch of us would hop in our car, and we would go, and we would sit with Jane and Bob and a bunch of other people and listen to Seth talk. And that was very different from what I experienced. I don't think Jane experienced it or called herself a medium in any kind of a way.
She was probably channeling more.
Channeling more, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and there is a difference. And, it's one of the things that I'm trying to do is educate people a little bit more about what these terms mean and the differences.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, you're not a practicing medium per se.
No. I thought that's what I should do, is some kind of a service in some sort of a way. But my spirit guides had said, there are plenty of other people who can do those particular things, like to give readings or platform readings or whatever.
Right.
You could do that, but that would be going backwards for you. That what you're able to do, few people can do, because you can write so well and you have access to a lot of educational information that a lot of mediums don't have access to. So we want to utilize your abilities in a different way. So I said, well, okay, that's fine. And that has worked ever since. And also to help with their agenda, to help people realize that everyone has the ability to communicate with people in spirit in some way, that it's just not the purview or privilege of a few people, but that everyone has different gifts in some way. So this book starts approaching ways that people can find those gifts and reactivate them if they want to.
Oh, that sounds really great. Well, we're about to go on our final break. And when we come back, yes, I want to hear about your new book, and you can tell us all about that. You've been listening to the Psychic Professor Show. My guest is August Goforth, and we're going to take a break.
Have you discovered the remarkable books at angelhealinghouse.com? Author Claire Candy Hoff has channeled rare books of inspiration and insight.
Angels of Faith is an inspiring story of healing, comfort, and hope that reminds us that death is not to be feared, but embraced with joy.
One True Home, Behind the Veil of Forgetfulness, takes readers on a roller coaster ride through Angel Ariel's 5 most important lives on Earth, as well as her experiences in the afterlife, and helps us remember our own journey across the veil.
And Claire Candy's autobiography, I Am an Angelic Walk-In, which details the 2003 soul exchange that took place when Claire Candy walked out of her body and Angel Ariel walked in, creating heaven on earth for herself and others.
To find out more about these wonderful books, visit angelhealinghouse.com today.
In this day and age, if you don't reinvent yourself, you may never find balance, peace, and the sustainable life that is your birthright. Angela Watson Robertson, known as the Reinvention Warrior and the host of breakthrough radio show Masters of Reinvention, is here to help you reinvent every area of your life. Tune in and hear from the best in the personal transformation business and discover tips and tools for positive change. Live every month on Transformation Talk Radio.
Do you know how to achieve wellness in all areas of your life? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Signs of wellness are a capacity to love and ability to nurture, a sense of purpose, a good sense of humor and plenty of fun in your life, a concern for others and a respect for the environment, a conscious commitment to personal excellence, a sense of balance and integrated lifestyle, and capacity to cope with whatever life presents. Well, people enjoy their lives and want them to last as long as possible. That's why the wellness mindset usually accompanies other constructive, healthy lifestyle habits. By adopting a wellness mindset and behaviors like eating well, taking the right nutrition for the body, exercising, and saying affirmations are just a few things to structure a healthy system of values and beliefs. I will be your wellness coach to help you achieve a wellness lifestyle. Call us at 888-777-4232. That's 888-777-4232. And visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Hello, I'm Dr. Susan Barnes, and we're back on the Psychic Professor Show. And my guest today is August Goforth. And we have been talking about mediumship, and he just started to tell us about his new book that is about to come out. So, August, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It's a segue, maybe, from the first book, which had the thread. The spirit people who helped write it used the subject of grief as a thread throughout, which we can, most people can identify, or we're going to have to identify, because nobody is going to not have grief at some point in their life. So as a therapist, I was very interested in this, and from things that I've learned through my own practice over the years. So this book is about grief. It's called The Risen, a Companion to Grief. And it's meant for people in deepest of grief. It's not meant to cure grief or solve grief. It's not being presented for me as an expert on the afterlife or as an expert on grief, for that matter. It's just simply a companion that sometimes when we are completely lost and abandoned and isolated and in desolation from our grief experiences, people who've been in it know how dark it can be indeed. This book is just meant as a companion to help cheer you up a little bit, to take advantage in a way of your openness from the grief, because it strips us bare of so many defenses, and to introduce slightly higher vibrations and slightly higher ideas. It's meant to show that grief is not meant something to get over, but something to get through, that grief can be transformed. However, grief can't be transformed naturally. It just doesn't happen the way the weather does. Grief has to be transformed not by nature, but by higher nature. And grief, a very profound grief experience, is also a very profound opportunity to grow and expand in ways that otherwise you would never have. And so this book is there as a companion and a guide to how to transform these grief experiences a little bit at a time. How to grow through them, how to no longer be afraid of them, how to come in contact with spirit, how to let spirit help you through your grief, because they are waiting at all times to help us as long as we ask for it. So I hope that the book will provide some comfort for people who are in grief. I've gotten some very good reviews and feedback from it. It is going to go live. It's going to be released. It's just in pre-publishing right now. It's going to go live probably in a week. The website, which is called therisenbooks.com, is being updated to. So there's going to be a new website to introduce this book and then also introduce a couple other new books that I'm helping some other people publish.
Yes, I know. You're helping Riley Haggerty with some of his work as well.
Yes, very important. He's a spiritualist historian. And so he is my small press is called Tempestina Teapot. And Riley has his own imprint, which is called the Circle of Light Research. And so I'm actually helping him get his books published. So his books will also be published by Tempestina Teapot Books and then featured on the new website as well. And his books are fantastic. It's as a spiritualist historian, he just brings things that we'd never find otherwise.
Oh, I know. I've read his books, and he's very thorough and very detailed. And I've spoken to him, and I'm just very impressed with his work. Yeah. So you have some good people working with you too. So this is exciting. So you're going to get the press up and going, which is good. And it's I really like the fact that the people you have working with you are really, really spiritualist people. Because one of the things that concerns me is that some people in their grief realize that they're mediums and then they go out and start practicing mediumship without any training.
Right, without any training or structure or support or education.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not a terribly bad thing, but there are better ways to go about it.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, as someone who's gone through a lot of training, I would say yeah. There's do's and don'ts also, and
right, it's very scientific too. Right.
Yes.
And so it's not a very hodgepodgey kind of thing. There are scientific approaches to mediumship and safety measures that are taken as you would in any laboratory. There's a lot of experimentation, exploration going on, but you have to have safety measures set up before you do these things. And I'm not saying that to frighten people that there are evil spirits out there trying to get them, but it's just that if you're going to become an electrician, you have to learn how to protect yourself from the electricity, which otherwise could hurt you rather than harm you.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to get yourself shocked. But no, that's true, because there's just certain things with mediumship, and some of it's kind of the opposite of what you think. I know in trance, I have to keep warning people, don't touch the medium. You talk to them, and then I always offer them some water. I always make sure I have water in the room.
Yeah, it's interesting. It just one last thing. I remember years ago, I had a roommate who was a professional hypnotist.
Okay. And August, you were telling us about your former roommate who was a professional hypnotist.
This was just off the cuff because you had talked about trance, and I'd forgotten about this, but I had a roommate for several years. In my early 30s, who was a professional hypnotist, who had his own television show. He was very successful, so he knew what he was doing. And he asked one day if he could hypnotize me, and I said, sure, go ahead. I've never been hypnotized. It could be interesting. And about 2 or 3 hours later, he just looked at me and he said, I've never had this happen before, but either you can't be hypnotized, which is very rare in my experience, or you are existing in this kind of trance state almost all the time. He says, that's not to alarm you. You know, you seem to be perfectly normal. I just don't know what it means. So it's a take it for what it's worth. And I think that's what you were kind of picking up about my kind of work and how this goes is that it's more of a trance kind of state of existence rather than off and on channeling existence.
Yes. But I know because you're a professional person, you're able to turn it on and off. And that's a question that some people have, is that when people start doing this, they get all this information and they can't turn it off and they kind of start going a little crazy until they learn how to do it. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that speaks to your insistence on having proper training.
Yeah. And the other reason for that, and I'm very, very much a believer in, you've got to know natural law And that goes along with spiritualist philosophy. Not that you have to become a spiritualist, but you need to understand the philosophy behind it of like attracts like. Otherwise, you can get yourself into trouble.
Right. And you have to be a fairly stable person, in my opinion, in terms of your psychology and your emotional capabilities to grow with it rather than to be impeded by it.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I sometimes wonder about some people who claim they're doing trance or channeling and all of this. And I listen to the messages very closely to see if I can, because I can tell when somebody's really doing trance and when they're not.
Right. Yeah, I know you can. So I know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, August, it has been wonderful having you on as my guest today. And I thank you very, very much for this. And I look forward to hopefully seeing you in about a month or so and talking more. So thank you. And I'm just going to let everybody know you have been listening to The Psychic Professor's Show with Dr. Susan Barnes. My guest today was August Goforth. And you can find out about me by going to my website at www.spiritartgallery.net. So goodbye until next week.
You've been listening to The Psychic Professor's Show with Dr. Susan Barnes, the Voices of Spirit Radio. Dr. Barnes' deep knowledge of spiritual issues provides an hour of lively talk and discussion about everything from historical facts to trance communication. To download this show or any past shows, or to learn more about Dr. Susan and her spirit-inspired art, visit spiritartgallery.net.